Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. This podcast is hosted by Laura Amin, a voracious reader of romance and young adult novels. In this podcast, Laura interviews fellow readers and authors and asks them for book recommendations of what we should read next. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. So happy to have you back. Today we have an author interview with New York Times bestseller author Natasha Solomons. Natasha writes historical fiction, and as you know, this is a new favorite genre for me. This week I had the opportunity to read her recently released book, House of Gold, which is an epic family story of a family who is placed on both sides of World War I. This book is great, immersive read, and if you're a fan of historical fiction, you should pick it up. Now let's get today's interview with Natasha Solomons. Hi Natasha, welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us who you are.
I'm in Dorset in the south of England. It's very pretty and remote and rural.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. And so you're an author. How many books have you written?
I've written 5. Slight hesitation. I've got to the point where I'm struggling to remember, but yes, no, I'm almost sure it's 5.
Okay. So we're going to talk about your books, your writing style, your books about House of Gold, which is a recently published book, as well as some books that influence your writing. So I'm excited to have you on board.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about your writing style. Do you share your work along the way, or do you wait until it's completed for others to read?
Well, I'm married to another writer. And so it really depends a little bit on where he is in his writing process. So if he is not completely lost in a book, I will share with him as I'm going and he will read a chapter here and there. But sometimes if he is hurtling towards an edit, he'll just be saying, no, I can't bear it. Don't make me read your book. And then I will send bits to my agent, and I don't tend to send things to my editor until I've got sort of in big chunks. I tend to send them kind of, you know, 50,000 words here and 50,000 words there, because editors usually can't, so they always have to give you notes, and usually all you want to hear until you're finished is, it's great, carry on. And unless you've done sort of some crazy mistake and they need to kind of tell you, you know, don't carry on doing that thing, and it's going to kind of, you know, it's going to be helpful moving forward. I don't want to hear any of that stuff until I've got to the end. Then I'll go back and I'll fix the stuff. Okay. But yeah, I don't tend to kind of workshop as I go along. But yes, so it's sort of those two readers, my husband and my agent. And it's interesting, they're both men as well, and I think they often have quite different reads from my editors, who are both women.
That's interesting. I can imagine they probably have a different point of view and different take on based on their experiences. They might just give you some feedback. And so it's interesting that you have male, your first readers may be male, and then your second readers are women.
Yes, they tend to have, they might have, certainly I think the first couple of books I wrote, they had sort of notes on the men. If the men sort of have observations often on sort of, if they notice things about interior decoration and things like that, I have to say my husband's like, no, a man wouldn't notice that. I'm like, no, you wouldn't notice. that doesn't mean that a man wouldn't, just you wouldn't. So, yeah. So he reads and then we fight. That's basically what happens.
That's awesome. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of all your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
Well, I mean, as I sort of, different ways, how I organize my day is, has got very kind of compressed because I now have small children. So the muse has to find me at my desk, and I'm incredibly disciplined, and I have to be. And I drop them off, and I have an internal clock ticking from the moment that they've gone till they come back. And I think I write sort of fueled on caffeine and anxiety. And then they sort of, they come back, I play with them, I feed them, then it's bedtime. And then I try and relax. And then I'm often with my laptop sort of in bed, often with a glass of wine, trying to get just squeeze out sort of a few more words before bedtime. Mm. And in terms of sort of inspiration, it's everywhere. Because I write historical fiction, I do huge amounts of reading. Mm. And I just read everything, mostly nonfiction. I find, unless it's sort of period fiction, as in sort of fiction written sort of during the time period or just sort of prior to the time period that I'm writing about, I tend to find it distracting. And it can be that if it's a contemporary author to now, I find that their style can sort of leak a little bit into what I'm writing. So when I'm writing, I tend to read very little contemporary fiction, especially if it's similar to a genre that I'm writing. So I mostly read lots of fairly heavy duty nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And that leads me on a kind of spider map of where I'm going. Mm.
That's amazing. Yeah, I can imagine when you're doing historical fiction that you just want to dive into the period of time, the different aspects of the period of time, and just kind of like weave them into the story. But it takes a lot of work.
It does. And previously, when I've researched my other novels, I do a little bit of research, and I intend to be very disciplined where I'm going to research and research for several months and then not start until I've kind of got a real sort of body of research behind me and I've sort of done a good story map. But then I get totally overexcited and I sort of fall in love with the character and I just want to start. But this time I use something different called the broken finger method, which was whilst picking up my kids from school, I was reading an email on my phone and I managed to slam my finger in the car door and break it. And so I then had to go for surgery on my finger. And I was like, it's fine. I've got 9 more. I can absolutely write a novel with 9 fingers. And it turns out that I absolutely couldn't write a novel with 9 fingers and that I needed all 10.
Yeah.
And so I had to take a break and I could do nothing but read. And I just read everything I've read. So some of this novel is set on the Eastern Front. It's from the Russian front during the First World War. So I read sort of diaries translated into the English from the German. I read accounts from Russian officers. I read everything that I could. And I really did. I researched for about 6 months. And then once I had that, I then lost the notebooks with all the research in and then wrote from what I could remember. But I think losing the notebook was also incredibly helpful because I think that there's a temptation if you're writing historical fiction to overstuff. And if you wouldn't describe it in contemporary fiction, if you find yourself describing kind of light fittings and sort of, you know, light switches, you wouldn't describe that in a contemporary novel. So you don't need it in historical fiction. Just leave it out. Unless it's sort of integral to the scene, you don't need it. And so I think just stripping away all of that. I mean, 95% of the research comes under the category of interesting but unnecessary. Mm. And I think that's the process, is of sort of knowing what you need and then discarding it all. Mm. But often I think one doesn't quite have the heart to discard it. And that's why throwing away the notebook was useful. If I it was a genuine accident, I never would have been able to do it on purpose.
So let's talk about House of Call. Can you give us a quick synopsis of what it's all about? I know it's a sweeping family saga set in World War I, you know, before World War I, around World War I. But can you give us a quick synopsis of it?
Well, the Goldbaum family are the confidants of emperors and kings. They're close to the wheels of power all across Europe. They've got banking houses in every capital. But despite that, they're never quite trusted because they're Jewish. Mm. And so to that end, Greta Goldbaum is being sent from Vienna. She's part of the Austrian dynasty, to London to marry her cousin Albert, a man who she's never met. And right from the outset, it looks like the marriage is going to be a disaster because the couple loathe each other on sight. Mm. But soon they've got sort of bigger things to worry about because the Great War is looming and the Goldbaum family itself is going to be broken apart. Mm. So really it's a novel of family, of power, of money, of war, of love, you know, sort of little themes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a really great novel.
Thank you.
So what inspired you to write House of Gold?
Well, hanging in my parents' house in Dorset is a portrait of one of my ancestors, Jacob Schwarzschild. Mm-hmm. And it's a portrait of a man in the Frankfurt ghetto. He's sort of wearing a black skull cap. And interestingly, he has a golden bird, a golden oriole on his desk. And Jacob Schwarzschild was a tutor and neighbor to the Rothschild family. And it sort of intrigued me that my family had sort of been so closely linked to the Rothschilds, and they'd been in the Frankfurt ghetto at the same time, and they'd left the ghetto at around the same time. And my family, their successors had been so sort of modest, with a mixture of sort of chess addicts, modest scientists, and we'd sort of done a few things, but it's a very much, in the most part, sort of history's B-side. And then the Rothschilds had sort of gone out and they'd sort of founded these banking houses across Europe. But despite that, had always remained still slightly set apart and other because of their Jewishness. And to me, the idea of these two families, that sort of tracing the history of that was what sort of was the jumping off point and the sort of inspiration for House of Gold.
Mm. And you mentioned your family connection. How much of your family history makes it into the book, if there are any parts of it or inspirations from it?
Well, it's mostly really one character. I had a great uncle. I get confused how many greats. Karl Schwarzschild. He was a very well-known astronomer. He was a friend and colleague of Albert Einstein, and some of his work and calculations that he did, Einstein then utilized when he was coming up with the theory of relativity. And Karl died fighting for the Germans during the First World War. Mm. And his death was considered a huge loss, both by the German sort of physicists and astronomers, and also by the British. And surprisingly, considering they were at war at the time, the Times in London published an obituary, and in the sort of Cambridge newspaper posted kind of a notice of tremendous regret that this brilliant mind and colleague had been lost. And it was about the kind of the travesty and the kind of the vagaries and wastages of war. And this really, really sort of struck with me. And I wanted to sort of write something in my book where about the arbitrariness of war. And in the novel, we've got sort of the character of Greta and Otto, this brother and sister who are incredibly close. And Greta comes from Austria, she comes from Vienna, and she marries this Albert, who's British. But when the war breaks out, she finds herself on the opposite side of the conflict from her immediate family. So she's nominally now a British citizen, or she is a British citizen, but her brother, her parents, they're all still Austrian. So they're supposedly her enemies. And it's just the absurdity of that. So I wanted to write about war, but from both sides, and not in a way where they're sort of they're goodies and they're baddies. So part of the novel is narrated from Otto's sort of point of view, where we see what it's like to be an Austrian Jewish soldier in a very anti-Semitic army. Mm-hmm. And as well as seeing what it's like to be sort of Greta as an enemy alien, an Austrian woman at home, on the home front, in Britain, amongst people who are incredibly suspicious of her, and what it's like for her to receive, she's supposed to sort of glory in every Austrian defeat, and how can she? Because she has the supposed enemy to her have faces, and the awfulness of all of that.
Yeah, it's so good. The book is amazing. So, you know, just plug in. You should read it. You should pick it up. If you're a fan of historical fiction, this book is a must pick. So what is your favorite character you have written?
That's so tricky. I'm really relieved to say that it's definitely different from children, because I'd say probably my favorite character is always the last one I've written. Mm-hmm. And with children, your favorite is not the last one. You love them all.
Yeah.
Probably it would be the characters from this book, because it's the most recent. Mm-hmm. And obviously I love Greta because she's very modern. She's kind of a modern slightly fierce woman trapped in sort of early 20th century Europe. And she's sort of sent, she's a pawn. She's sent to kind of marry her cousin because that's what's expected of her. And she's always sort of supposed to do her duty. And she's literally trapped by her own underwear and corseted in by these uncomfortable clothes that she has to wear, and she just wants to break free. She wants to dig her own garden, and she wants to sunbathe naked. Yeah. And I can empathize with that, but I also have sort of a soft spot, I think, for Clement, her brother-in-law, who fails so dismally to do his duty, and he knows he really ought to go on a diet because he's so terribly fat, but he just loves food too much. Mm. And it's too hard, and he fails in so many things, whether it's doing his duty or doing his diets. And I can empathize with that too. Mm. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think it's sort of, I think when you write, there's a little piece of you, but bits of you in every character. And yeah, and I think that's the sort of the pleasure of writing, really, is that kind of emotional ventriloquism when you can be a little bit of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and Otto, I think, as well. Poor Otto. So yes,
you have amazing characters. So let's talk about the effects of war on women. What inspired you to write about it, and how much of your research informed made it into the book?
Yeah, it's all based on research, so it's all true. I think you're referring to a little bit about how Greta, during the war, she starts a hospital for women and children, because during the First World War in Britain, they shut down a lot of the women's hospitals and the maternity units and turned them all over to men who were coming back injured from the front. So women and babies started to die again in sort of rather large numbers during the First World War. They're sort of rather the unsung deaths of the First World War were women and babies. Mm-hmm. And Greta, following in the footsteps of people like Consuela Vanderbilt, the Duchess of Devonshire, sort of so inspired by her, she opens this women's hospital, a sort of little one in her as part of her estate. But despite that, there's still this huge shortage of supplies. So things like cotton, there's an absolute shortage of cotton because it's all going for uniforms, for men's uniforms at the front, and bandages. It's all for men's wounds, not for women.
Mm-hmm.
So things like women do, they gather sphagnum moss, which is a kind of moss which has sort of natural antiseptic properties, and they gather it sort of at dawn and they send it on the trains, and it goes all the way to France. But they keep some back sort of for domestic use, for injuries at home, because if a woman gets injured, she's not going to get to use, you know, nice cotton bandages. She's going to have to make do with moss. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that shocked me most was that suture silk, so silk at this time was silk from silkworms, and that was the sort of the medical grade silk that was used if you had sort of an injury that needed to be stitched. That was really quite strictly used and reserved for men. So when people at home on the home front got injured, there was such a shortage, they would just be stitched up in what could be found. Anything from fishing twine to catgut, and there was just this hierarchy, really, of wounds and bodies, with men's bodies and their war wounds right at the top, and women's injuries and women's bodies right at the bottom. And so things like, you know, childbirth, if you tore in childbirth, yeah, you wouldn't be stitched up with the nice suture silk. You might well find it would be catgut or fishing twine. And I found that pretty, yeah. Having had two children, that definitely makes me wince.
Yeah, I can wince about that. And that's incredible. That's, you know, heartbreaking to experience at war. You know, the role of women, you know, just secondary, it's heartbreaking, you know. But thank you. Thank you for including in the research into your book and informing this, because it's not something that we typically see in historical fiction. We may see the effects of war in men, but we may not see the effects of war in women. And, you know, just taking that experience there.
Oh, pleasure.
Now, let's talk about books that influence your writing. What type of books do you read? And you mentioned you read a lot of nonfiction for work, but do you read other books? You read other books that maybe for pleasure?
I do, but I think it's tricky. By now, because I spend so much of my time writing, and I'm mostly writing, it is the majority of what I read is nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And I tend to find that I don't read that much in the genre where I write, because it feels like work, which is a terrible admission. Mm-hmm. And if I want to relax, I want to read something that's just wildly far away from something that I would sort of usually write. So it tends to be quite different. So so I read Nicole Cook's The Breakaway. She's a gold medal winning cyclist. I read her autobiography about her journey on, you know, becoming a gold medal winning cyclist from rural Wales. I'm never going to write a book like that. I'm a terrible cyclist. I'm so unsporty. I fall off whenever a car comes close by. I absolutely loved her book because it sort of took me so far away. For me, reading that book was an absolute adventure. And also it's a real sort of feminist story. Mm. And I was shouting at the page. And I did. I absolutely loved it. So it's a bit tricky. I do read some fiction, but it's tricky. Mm-hmm. I have to be really careful that it doesn't then leak into what I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that could be a difficult thing. I wouldn't see yourself reading historical fiction just because you write historical fiction. Maybe, you know, maybe something out of the comfort zone, maybe something just to get a break from work.
Yeah, no, I tend to. So, my friends have learned sort of that I'm a terrible person to ask for kind of book recommendations from, because it always tends to be these sort of great tomes of nonfiction that they then just hand straight back to me, having used as doorstops for a week or two and then returned.
So what book should my audience pick up now to TBR pile?
Well, the one I put on my to be read pile for your audience, I'd say, is something by Elizabeth Jane Howard. She's a British author, and her most famous series of books are called The Cazalet Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And I can't recommend them strongly enough. I absolutely love them. If you like Downton Abbey, you will just adore these books. Mm-hmm. They are about an English family, the Cazalets, and it follows them sort of just before the breakout of the Second World War and sort of all through the Second World War and beyond. And it's, I forget how many books there are, there's probably sort of, must be about eight, and it follows the whole family and their sort of their lives, their loves, the disasters. And they're not quite as wealthy as the family in Downton, but they're based on Elizabeth Jane Howard's own family. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the characters, and they feel so real. They're so well written. They're sort of, to me, they're kind of, that they are sort of a genre of their own, this amazing saga. They're so beautifully written. The characters are so real. And they're like nothing else. And I could just return to them again and again. They're just absolutely exquisite. If you're wanting sort of a portrait of an English family and English life, and it's both its kind of its joys, its tragedies, and the sense of England during the Second World War for a sort of upper class, upper middle class family, it's the Cazalets, and it's just joyful. I couldn't recommend it enough.
I'm so picking this up after I read House of Gold. I'm excited. So tell us where we can find you online.
At natashasolomons.com, and then I'm also on Instagram. You can find me there too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha, for a great interview. For show notes and other useful information, please visit whatyourenextblog.com/74. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider the review on iTunes. This is the best way for this podcast to get discovered by new audiences. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you soon.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.